Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity to speak to you. What I'm going to do today is speak about a few therapies that I use in my office. I'm a medical doctor from Denver, and we have a complementary medical clinic, and about half of my practice is devoted to dealing with the disease that most of us suffer, and in fact, all of us suffer. That's the disease of aging. The rest of my practice is devoted to dealing with patients that have more traditional diseases, such as fibromyalgia, cancer, MS, and some of the other diseases we've talked about earlier today. What I'd like to do is present one particular patient who had a severe form of metastatic kidney cancer, and I used LDN initially, and then I used some other therapies to treat this woman who had an extremely grim prognosis. This is not the only cancer patient that I've treated so far with LDN, but her results are remarkable, and I'm going to use this as an opportunity to talk about LDN and its treatment, also a brief overview of what renal cell cancer, kidney cancer, is about, and also an introduction to two other novel cancer therapies that are not commonly used in this country: intravenous vitamin C, IVC, and LDC, low-dose chemotherapy, also known as IPT, or insulin-potentiated therapies. The patient was Claudia. Claudia was 52 years old, and she presented to her local doctor with many years of pain in her groin. She lived in a small town on the western slope of Colorado and did not have health insurance, so she was unable to be adequately diagnosed. She wanted to get a CAT scan to see what was going on. She got a job working as a technician at her local hospital and obtained health insurance, and therefore was able to go in and get a CAT scan to find out why her groin was hurting so much. The doctor ordered a CAT scan of her pelvis and abdomen. It didn't show any reason that she would have several years of groin pain, but they did find a softball-sized lesion in her right kidney. And then she underwent exploratory surgery in mid-July of 2003. Claudia's past medical history was unremarkable. She was previously healthy. She'd been pregnant twice but had no children. She'd never been in the hospital. No allergies, was on no medications. She did not take any vitamins or supplements. She was a very light drinker, and she was a non-smoker. And that's relevant because renal cell cancer, kidney cancer, is often the result of cigarette smoking. She really had nothing wrong with her other than the groin pain and the low back pain. Her family history was interesting because her three years older brother had also been diagnosed with renal cell cancer 7 years previously. Her mother was alive and well at 82 and is still alive and well today. Her father died in a car accident when he was 68. So let's talk a little bit about renal cell cancer. It's a fairly rare malignancy. It only consists of 3% of adult cancers, but there are a lot of problems associated with renal cell cancer. It doesn't really present with typical warning signs. It has lots of multiple manifestations. When I was in medical school, we learned that renal cell cancer was one of the great masqueraders. It doesn't respond very well to the traditional therapies such as chemotherapy or radiation. And it's also poorly responsive to the immunotherapeutic new drugs that are being used as well for cancers. There are 31,000 cases of renal cell cancer a year, which leads to 12,000 deaths, so it has a high mortality. The incidence of renal cell cancer has been increasing by about 3% a year, perhaps due to the fact that we have increased pollution in the world. The greatest increase is seen in African Americans. The renal cell cancer occurs in the tissue of the proximal renal tubule. It occurs both sporadic and hereditary form. Since Claudia's brother had it, she probably had the hereditary form. Renal cell cancer, even though it's only 3% of cancers, it's the sixth leading cause of cancer death, so it's a very aggressive and dangerous cancer. And you can compare the five-year survival between 1969 and the present time. And in the past 40 years, the statistics have really not changed much except for the very earliest stage one cancers. And I think the reason that the statistics are better are because people are being diagnosed earlier. But in particular, Claudia was stage four, where the disease has spread and has distant metastases, and the five-year survival for that is very poor, only 11%. Renal cell cancer is more common, twice as common in men than in women. It typically presents and is diagnosed between the fourth and sixth decades, but it has been reported in younger people, particularly when it is in the hereditary form. The causative factors for renal cell cancer include cigarette smoking. Smokers have double the risk of renal cell cancer and is the cause of one out of three of all cases. And the more an individual smokes, the greater the chance of their developing cancer. Obesity is a risk factor, particularly in women, as is high blood pressure. Unopposed estrogen therapy, and this refers to the non-bioidentical, the Premarin-type estrogen therapy, and also occupational exposure to environmental toxins, such as petroleum products, heavy metals, solvents, and asbestos in particular. There are multiple different cell types. Claudia had the most common, the clear cell type of renal cell cancer. When patients present, the classic triad for diagnosis of renal cell cancer is the combination of blood in the urine, hematuria, particularly painless hematuria. If a patient presents with no pain but blood in their urine, we're supposed, as doctors, to think of either renal cell cancer or kidney tuberculosis until proven otherwise, because there are not a lot of causes for painless bleeding from the kidneys. The second common part of the triad is flank pain, and then finally a mass that's palpable in the region of the kidney in the flank or abdomen. The problem is that classic triad of flank pain, hematuria, and a mass is only seen in 10% of patients. And by the time a patient presents with those three things, they already have very advanced disease and are typically untreated. About one out of three patients are asymptomatic, and their kidney cell cancers are found as a result of a study being done for something else, which is what happened in Claudia's case. She was looking at groin pain, and they just happened to find this renal cell cancer. There are other presenting symptoms like weight loss, fever, high blood pressure, et cetera. Physical findings that you find with kidney cancer include blood in the urine with what are called worm-like clots. This suggests that the bleeding is coming from the kidneys and not from the bladder. High blood pressure, lymph nodes above the clavicle, and a mass in the flank that you can hear what's called a bruit, which when you place a stethoscope on is a sound of increased blood flow through the organ. About 30% of patients with renal cell cancer already are metastatic at the time of diagnosis, and the most common organs that are involved include the lungs, soft tissue, bones, liver, and other sites. Kidney cancer is staged in four stages. Most cancers are staged according to stage 1, 2, 3, or 4. Stage 1 is just within the kidney. Stage 2 is outside of the kidney into the fascia. Stage 3, it invades into the regional lymph nodes or the vena cava. And then stage 4, which is what Claudia had, it is invaded into the adjacent organs and or has distant metastases, and she had both of those. Then we have for different types of cancers, what are called the tumor, node, and metastasis classification. And then we have the TNM, and these vary according to the degree of cancer. In Claudia's case, she had the worst type, which was T4, where the tumor invaded beyond the fascia and had distant metastases. In the node involvement, they can be either no nodes or distant nodes or local nodes. She had distant nodes, more than one regional lymph node. And then distant metastases, she had distant metastases. So she was the worst of all possible worlds. The conventional treatment options for kidney cancer are quite poor. They've tried surgery, radiation, chemo, hormones, immunotherapy, but none of these is accepted as a standard of care because none of them works. The objective response rates, either for single or combination chemotherapy, are lower than 1 in 7 patients responding to that. Renal cell cancer is an immunogenic tumor, so we've tried immunogenic therapies, interferon, interleukin, and things along those lines. And these actually do have a slight effect on this, and we use those as part of our treatment for Claudia eventually. So Claudia was the worst case. She was stage T4, N2, M1. Her prognosis at best was 11% chance of a 5-year survival. So I went to the journals, and what they said was renal cell cancer is one of the few tumors in which well-documented cases of spontaneous tumor regression in the absence of therapy exist, but this occurs very rarely and may not lead to long-term survival. Systemic therapy has demonstrated only limited effectiveness. For stage 4 renal cell cancer, almost all of these patients are incurable. Tumor embolization, external beam irradiation, and nephrectomy can aid in the palliation of symptoms due to the primary tumor or related ectopic hormone production. There's minimal evidence that nephrectomy induces regression of distant mets. Hence, nephrectomy in the hope that it will be followed by spontaneous regression of metastases is not advised. So even though they didn't advise that she have surgery, she did end up having that done. So Claudia got that new job at the hospital, got the CT scan as part of the evaluation in 6 of 23. And this is the initial CAT scan. This is her normal kidney. And that's the cancerous kidney. So it was a large cancer that was diagnosed initially. And she underwent surgery on 7/15. She had a right radical nephrectomy where they removed her kidney, adrenal gland, and lymph nodes from that side. It was a 12-centimeter lesion, which is a large baseball-sized lesion. The pathology was renal cell cancer. And they told her, there is no cure. You're going to die. She was offered the option of going into the local medical school, the University of Colorado School of Medicine, for an experimental protocol, but she declined that. So when she came to see me a few months after diagnosis in January of 04, she brought in her first chest CAT scan, and this showed multiple lung nodules in the right lower lobe, the left upper lobe. She had mediastinal lymph nodes in the center of her chest. Her abdominal CAT scans showed mesenteric lymph nodes. It hadn't spread to her bone. So this is actually the CAT scan report. And from the chest, it says there's been interval development compared to the previous chest CAT scan of 2 and possibly 3 pulmonary nodules. The impression is interval development of bilateral pulmonary nodules and mediastinal lymphadenopathy, worrisome for malignancy, including metastatic renal cell cancer. In the abdomen, the bottom of the page, circled, it says, soft tissue nodule in the upper left abdomen, worrisome for mesenteric lymph node, which has increased in size from the previous exam. So 3 weeks later, in February of 04, she began treatment with me. I did several of the things that Dr. Berkson recommends for cancer. I agree that cancer cells are very peculiar in that their metabolism is such that they can eat only one food. Cancer cells are unable to metabolize fats or proteins, and they can only eat sugar. And so the first thing that we do in our clinic is put patients on a no-sugar and low glycemic index diet. And this is not widely accepted by traditional oncologists for reasons that are not clear to me. And most oncologists don't seem to realize that cancer cells eat sugar very avidly. When we do PET scans, the reason we do PET scans is what the PET scan does is it gives a patient an intravenous injection of radioactive sugar. And the radioactive sugar, when we saw the scans of PET scans before, the areas that lit up were basically areas that took up sugar very avidly. So the first part of therapy is to put patients on a low sugar diet. The oncologist that I refer to have an office about a mile from me. And one of my patients came back to me after I had sent them there for some therapy and said, I guess the oncologists don't agree with you about the hazards of sugar for cancer patients because they have a Coke machine in their waiting room. So I don't know if they were looking to stimulate business or what they had in mind. But anyway, the first thing we did was put her on a low sugar, no sugar, low glycemic diet. She ate 85% of her diet organic. She lived on the western slope where she had elk meat available to her. She ate organic beef and chicken, lots of vegetables, and fluids were restricted to water and green tea. Green tea has anti-cancer effects as well. We put her on some supplements. We weren't terribly aggressive with her. We put her on a lot of vitamin C to bowel tolerance. That's as much as she could take without getting diarrhea. We put her on a multiple vitamin and mineral. We put her on fish oil, EPA, DHA, 2 grams of fatty acids twice a day. Graviola, which is an herb that has anti-cancer properties, and pancreatic enzymes called Wob enzyme, which helps to digest protein and can open up certain types of cancers so the immune system can get to them. I would have used a lot more supplements for her, but she really doesn't have a lot of money. And as a result, we decided to just use a minimum amount of supplements for her. So I looked on the website and saw the list of the cancers that respond to LDN, and lo and behold, renal cell cancer was one of the LDN responsive cancers. So Claudia was my first LDN patient. And what I did is I, back then in 03 and 04, it seemed as though 3 milligrams was the dose, not 4.5 milligrams. So because Claudia didn't have a lot of money, what we did is I simply wrote her a prescription for 100 milligram capsules of naltrexone. I told her to dissolve one capsule in about 3 ounces of water, 100 milliliters of water, keep it in a glass jar in a refrigerator, and take 1 teaspoon, which is about 3 milligrams every night. So 100 milligram capsule lasted her a month, cost her a couple bucks. So she was able to provide herself with this therapy for about $2 a month. So it was very cost effective for her, and she went on this as her initial therapy. Her second metastatic workup was done after she went on the diet and the supplements for 8 weeks and the LDN. So 8 weeks into the program, follow-up chest CAT scan showed that the right lower lobe nodule was slightly increased, the left upper lobe nodule was slightly smaller, and the precarinal lymph node was slightly smaller. The abdominal CT showed that the liver lesions hadn't changed. So we'd done a little bit of good, but not a tremendous amount of good. So I decided to add a therapy that I've been using in my clinic for a number of years, and that's high-dose intravenous vitamin C. And we'll talk a little bit about this later. So I gave her IV vitamin C daily, 5 days a week for 2 weeks. So she got 10 days of intravenous vitamin C. I initially began at 25 grams, which is can be done on anybody without a problem. And then you have to check a blood test called the G6PD level before you increase it above that. And I have gradually increased her up to 75 grams. That's 75,000 milligrams of vitamin C. That takes about 3 hours to give that amount of vitamin C. You need to give it slowly at a rate of about 1/2 gram a minute. And we actually measure vitamin C levels. That was a level that she needed to get a killing dose of vitamin C in her bloodstream. And there's a formulation for what we use, the vitamin C and some calcium and magnesium and potassium and a little bit of EDTA and glutathione. We also enrolled her in this low-dose chemotherapy, which is called insulin potentiation therapy, IPT, where we give insulin and then chemotherapy in very low doses. And we used interleukin alpha, interferon alpha, interferon alpha, interleukin 2, which she got once a week for 8 weeks between June and August of 04. Following the 10 intravenous vitamin C's and 4 of the low-dose chemotherapies, the follow-up chest CAT scan showed that the right lower lobe lesion in her lung was barely perceptible. The left upper lobe lung lesion was not seen, but the lymph nodes in her chest and the pleural thickening still remained. So this chest CAT scan report says bilateral pulmonary nodules have improved and are decreased in size. The right pleural-based nodules and pleural thickening are unchanged. So we did four more vitamin C IVs and 8 more low-dose chemotherapy treatments, continued her on the LDN throughout this period of time, and then the follow-up CAT scans showed that her chest CT, pulmonary nodules, and lymphadenopathy was gone. The abdominal CAT scan, still no change in lesion, but the radiologist said these are probably benign cysts, whatever's left. So findings were the lungs are clear, the lung nodules seen on the chest CAT scan in April of 04 have resolved, and the CAT scan of the pelvis, the left ureter, urinary bladder, uterus, and bowel appear normal. So everything in the abdomen looked good and in the pelvis. The following year, in March of 05, chest CAT scans said no evidence of metastatic disease. The abdomen CT just had benign cysts. This is a report where essentially everything is now clear. No evidence of metastatic disease. So as of this month, Claudia remains disease-free. She got remarried last year. She continues to take one capsule of 100 milligrams of naltrexone, dissolve it in 3 ounces of water, and take a teaspoon every night at bedtime for about $2 a month. And then she comes in and gets a high-dose vitamin C IV once a month. That's the extent of her therapy. I'd like to talk a little bit about what's going on with the war on cancer. Cancer is now the leading cause of death in the United States. More than 1.2 million Americans develop cancer each year, and one of us is being diagnosed newly with cancer twice a minute. This is President Nixon signing the bill enacting the war on cancer 40 years ago. But nonetheless, things really haven't changed much, and cancer is increasing to the point now that men have a 50-50 chance that they will develop cancer at some point in their lifetime. We see that most of the common cancers have stayed pretty flat over the past several decades, past 70 years. Lung cancer has peaked and is going down, but most of the other ones are about the same. Women have about a 30% chance, 33% chance of developing cancer sometime in their lifetime. And unfortunately, since women started smoking more recently, their incidence of lung cancer has gone up quite a bit. Cancer remains predominantly a disease of older people. The average age at which cancer is diagnosed is 67 and a half. It's really the fact that we're diagnosing cancer earlier, not that we're doing a better job of treating it, that explains the increased survival today, because the survival rates for most common cancers have not changed significantly in 40 years. But even though we're not doing a much better job at treating cancer, we're spending a lot more money doing it. Right now, 5% of all the money we spend on healthcare is related to cancer therapies. The total direct and indirect costs are almost $200 billion. This shows the increasing amount of money we're spending on cancer treatments over the past few decades, and it's gone up astronomically. One of the reasons is that we're treating more and more patients with chemotherapy than we ever did before. This shows various ages and the number of people that receive chemotherapy over the different decades. So we see from 1988 to 2000, in any age group, more and more people are receiving chemotherapy for the treatment of their diseases. And in addition to the fact that more and more people are getting chemotherapy, the cost of the drugs is increasing dramatically as well. When I was in medical school several decades ago, the treatment for colon cancer, these are drugs that we use to treat colon cancer with. The only chemotherapy drug that we had for colon cancer was 5-fluorouracil. And 5-FU, a vial of 5-FU now costs $2.63. So we can provide this therapy for people for less than $3. In 1996, Camptosar, or irinotecan, came out. The dose that's used for one course of chemotherapy now costs $1,464. In 02, the standard of care for many people with metastatic colon cancer has moved over to Gemzar and Cisplat, which is $1,562. And the new generation of drugs, Avastin, is $3,715. So we see that the costs for the chemotherapy drugs are increasing astronomically, even though there's not a significant increase in survival with Avastin compared to 5-FU. So the conventional cancer therapies, in addition to being expensive and not terribly expensive, are fairly limited in their scope. The only real accepted therapies are surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation for cancer. And some of the newer modalities are variants of chemotherapy, which are biological drugs and hormonal therapy, such as the drugs we use for tamoxifen for breast cancer and the drugs for prostate cancer. The problem with conventional cancer therapy is it has a lot of drawbacks. Number one, most of these therapies are very painful. anybody that's been through surgery or chemotherapy knows how bad and painful it can be. They're associated with truly horrendous side effects. The morbidity, the disease caused by the treatment itself, is nearly universal. Anyone who goes through chemotherapy gets sick from it. And many people die from it. The cancer wards are filled with patients not sick from the disease itself, but sick from the side effects of the drugs. And they're horrendously expensive. So there are a lot of drawbacks to conventional cancer therapies. Surgery is disfiguring, it's painful. At best, it's a hard thing to go through. Radiation therapy has numerous side effects associated with it. It's difficult on people, and it leads to problems after the therapy is completed. And chemotherapy is so toxic that the people that administer it, they wear these hazmat suits. They cover themselves up from head to toe because if they get a drop of it on their skin, it can be so hazardous. So, and they're injecting this.